Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Wow.
So good of you to come.
Thank you. So good of you to come.
Is somebody supposed to be here?
No.
No.
That's for the dragon.
Okay. You know, you're such a legend, and you've done so many cool things. How did you approach this character and make him unique?
Well, first of all, David Lowry came to me and he allowed me to step in and develop the character further than it was written. So that allowed me to sort of take responsibility for the character and have a little bit of authorship. So my whole thing about the character was that he was a storyteller. And since storytelling was a big part of my life growing up here in Los Angeles, and it was a very difficult time, difficult life, lower working class neighborhood, people didn't have much, so storytelling became a huge thing. It became a way out of a tough situation. And that played a big role in my life as a kid. So storytelling being so big, I thought, well, here's a story that really is storytelling and involves fantasy and realism together. And so Lowry, where I think he gets credit, is that he's combined reality and magic in one thing. He's put them together. When I read the script, I thought, well, this reminds me of my childhood with Disney movies that I saw and how much I loved that when I was a little kid. Bambi, Fantasia, things like that. And then he stopped making those films and he went into adult stuff and I lost interest in him. Lowry has what he's done is he's brought these two things together, and what I love about it is that it's created a kind of atmosphere of magic. And I think magic was such a part of my life when I was young. That was your hope factor. That was the thing you hoped was, there's something out there beyond me that's good. Something out there beyond me in this small world I'm living in that's bigger and special and fabulous. And so you kind of hung on to that. Someday I'm going to go there. Someday I'm going to be out of here and I'm going to go there. And what Lowry did with the character was that when I first read it, I said, well, it's a nice idea for a movie, but I felt he was underdrawn. And he opened it up and said, look, why don't you step in and be part of the development of this character? So he allowed me to step in and work on the character. And then things changed. I felt like I was part of things. And I felt like what could be developed was more of him, the storyteller, and more of him trying to see things beyond what you see in front of you. He tells his daughter, he says, you only see what's in front of you, but there's stuff, other stuff. Look around, look beyond. I like that concept a lot. So him opening that up and him developing it and doing a little bit with me was a pleasure.
When you're working with another director, how much are you able to turn off the director side of yourself?
That's a good question. It's sometimes hard, sometimes it's easy. In this case, it was easier because this is not a subject I probably would have gotten involved with as a director. So it was all new terrain, and he had quite a grip on it. He had spent a lot of time on it. He had developed quite a storyboard about filming it. And so I was free to just be an actor. Other times, if it's a more serious situation where I've been before, you just have to turn something off because it's not fair to the director to be directing yourself while you're acting. It's just not a good thing. So you have to turn the switch off. See, I'm just here as an actor.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Redford, you are a legend. I mean, I'm named after Jeremiah Johnson because
you
of you. Yeah, my name is Jeremiah. And my
no kidding.
Mother's maiden name was Johnson.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that you are the reason I'm here. But
it's amazing.
Just raw. You in this film, this is really your film. Everything you've done it has been very outside of this fantasy type
yes.
world. This is, I mean, Civil War, that Captain America was kind of your first big, like, CGI type film that had stuff. This was CGI. How was your time filming with Elliot, and you made it so convincing?
Well, let me go back. First of all, let me go back a little bit to Jeremiah Johnson.
Go right ahead.
Well, no, I'll make it brief. It's a really interesting story because I read this book called The Saga of Little Eaton Johnson, and I went to Sidney Pollack and I said, I want to make this film about this guy. He was before Cowboy. There was that period of time, the Trappers, before Cowboy. Great piece of American history that hasn't been seen before. Took a while for Sidney to get on board with that. Finally he did. Then he and I developed the script. And so it was a very personal film. And the studio had no interest in it whatsoever. They said, we don't think you're going to have a beard, you're going to have a traps, and you're going to... No, I don't think so. And you want to make it in Utah? And I said, yeah. I want to make it in some property that I own there. It's wild. And they didn't like that idea either. So we went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, they said, okay, you're passionate about this. We'll put this amount of money in a bank in Salt Lake City, and it's yours. You spend it how you make the movie you want to make, but if you go over that budget, it comes out of your hide. So he said, we'll take that risk, because they didn't believe we could make it for $3 million. They thought it would be more like 5 to 7. So we went up and we made the film. And it was tough. It was tough because you're out in the wilds. There was no trailers. There's nothing like that. It's in snow. You're freezing. You were in rivers that were frozen. It was tough, but it was real. When it was all over, when I saw the cut of the film, I was very proud of it. I said, this is really different. This is early American history of the West, and it was really terrific. And then what happened was, the guy that was head of distribution at Warner Brothers saw the film. He says, guys, I've seen the film. He says, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. It's different. And that's my problem. He said, I don't know how to market it. I don't know. I can't place it as a real Western. It's not really a Western. He said, it's going to take a while to figure it out. So for 2.5-3 years, it sat on the shelf and never got released. And then when it did get released, they wanted to prove that it was not a viable film commercially. So they released it at the second half of a double bill in the South. So they really tried everything. So it was 4 years before the film finally worked its way into the mainstream. And because we made it in 1970. So it was 1974, halfway through 1974, that it finally achieved a place.
I was made in 1974 also.
Just be glad you weren't born in 1970.
You said that you're a storyteller. Any specific story that you passed on to your children?
Oh, a lot. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I believed in making stories. I believed in not telling stories that were already written. I believed in telling stories that you would make up in the moment. And I hope that would pass on to my kids, because I think that using your imagination in a fresh, new way is good. It's a good exercise. Also, it's fun to do. You know, you stop and think, gee, I think I'm going to tell a story, and I'm just going to make it up as I go. And it was just something I enjoyed. It also exercised my mind.
You're saying that, have you repeated any of those stories over the years, the ones that you made up?
Probably with my grandchildren, yeah.
You talked a little bit about how you like to develop the characters. Is that something you look for when you're approached by a project, like that you want to be able to have some say in how the character is developed? Is that something
I do,
that you do just to choose?
That was what was nice about this film, because the original script, the character was not as fully developed as is finally. Mm-hmm. And David Lowry welcomed me to come in and play a role in developing the character further. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason why it was fun to do the film, because I felt I had some role in developing the character beyond what he was originally written.
Your character bumped into a dragon, and that was part of his story, but to me it was a little bit unclear if it was Elliot was the dragon he originally met. Do you know, could you give me an answer to that, or was that
I can't give you an answer to that. It was just because it was just a story he told, but I think the inference was that it was. Mm-hmm. I think that was the inference. It wasn't out, or I said. He said, "I saw a dragon." Well, how many dragons are out in the forest? You know. So therefore, and what I loved about it was up to speculation for the audience to decide what they believed or what they didn't believe.
Well, your character is really believable. I mean, I felt like I got lost in the fantasy of the film.
Oh, that's great.
Because the way you spoke to the kids in the film just made it seem like this guy saw this guy.
Yeah, yeah. That was fun. By the way, I'm glad to hear that. That's a nice thing to hear. The kids in New Zealand, you know, very different from, you know, when you have kids, at least in the last several years, you have kids that are that age, you know, anywhere from 8 to 13. If they're Hollywood kids, you feel that. You there's something slightly artificial, slightly overdone. These kids were just themselves, and they were just absolutely who they were, and they just brought that to the table. They didn't bring any other stuff other than who they were as kids, and they were unspoiled, they were fun, they were wide-eyed, they were really interested. They were only interested in me in terms of how well I was telling my story. So as a result, if you see the film, I think you'll feel that with these kids. They're just real.
You know, I crying with this movie, with different emotion. I was crying and crying. And what I see, I believe.
Why?
I don't know, because touch my emotion and see the boy with the dragon and all the story, and touch my emotion, and I was crying. Oh. But the crying, it was good, because it's a good
it's
emotion,
good to cry.
You know?
It's and good to cry and laugh.
Yes. And I out the movie, I said, oh my God, and I talked to my granddaughter, I say, you need to see Peter Dragon with me, because he just enjoyed when I told the story. But I still crying with the movie, because...
Well, you know, we don't make movies like this anymore. We really don't. You know, we've become so dark and so realistic, and we're reflecting the culture around us, which is getting more violent. And so
exactly.
That films like this are very rare. So
yeah.
I love being able to be in a film like this that brings something
exactly.
back that used to be a lot more, you know.
That's
it's more uplifting, you know.
Because it was touched early, you know, the people, like the love with each other and the emotion they put the children.
Where are you from, Brazil?
From Cuba.
Cuba?
Cuba. And let me tell you something.
I was there.
For 1969. And I walk all Hollywood Boulevard looking for Met you. Unfortunately, you are in front of me. And the only I want to ask you is a picture with you, because this is my last opportunity. I was in Saudi.
Well, I was in Cuba, but I was in Cuba with Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Smuggled me in when Castro was there. He smuggled me in. And nobody found out. And then later on, I was there for 5 days. And I was smuggled back out again. And somebody, there was a whole community in Florida.
Yeah.
It was run by a guy named Castro. He was a Cuban that was anti, he was a right-wing refugee. And he was against Castro. He had a big role to play in the community in Florida, and he found out I was there, and he reported me to the Treasury Department. And so I was put under investigation for 6 months. What was I doing in Cuba with Castro? And then I went back there again later on.
Now it's different.
Great, very fascinating history.
But I'm very glad I met you finally. I saw almost all your movies, almost. But finally, when I say, oh my God, finally I'm going to meet Robert Redford. I can't believe it.
How was it for you to work with Bryce?
Oh God. Well, have you spent any time with her?
Yes.
You understand why I enjoyed it. She's just a delight. Mm-hmm. She's not only talented, but she just beams. She has such a life force.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a pleasure to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Really fun.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great time. The whole cast.
Sorry. Can you talk a little bit about the state of independent film versus blockbuster filmmaking as far as, you know, the Sundance Film Festival goes? And I just want to, I'm curious about your take on the state of how Hollywood is working right now.
Well, first of all, it was misconstrued for many years. It was seen as an insurgent move. you know, then we're in the hills in Utah, developing independent film was going to come and overtake the industry. Ever So is simply meant to add on that the Hollywood industry was beginning to become more centralized in terms of the product it was making, which is fine. But they were going to be spending less time on making the more humanistic kinds of films that they made in the 70s, when they controlled both. They were separating themselves out and just following the money, which was the big blockbuster films. And so you had Superman and Batman, you know, and that was fine. But I felt it shouldn't be at the expense of more humanistic stories. So starting Sundance was just meant to add on something that was being lost. That's all. And so as a result, I think what you have now is you have, I think you have both, you know, particularly with this film. This film really does combine reality and fantasy, you know, in an interesting way. And so I think you need both. I think to keep going, you need both. If you ever shrink yourself down too much, then something will start to die. You know?
Right.
And I think one of the great things about film, independent film, is diversity. You know?
Is there, you, of course, all your experience and everything, is there anything that you would like to do still, any projects that we did not realize, did not proceed?
Well, yeah, I'd like to do a musical. I want to do that for a long time, but basically there's always something new coming along, like just different, but I'm attracted to something that's a little bit different, you know, and that keeps coming along, so I will keep doing it.
Pete's Dragon, you know, this is not a remake, but it has the same name of the 70s one. Were you familiar with that movie?
No.
At all? Oh.
I never read the book, never saw the other film, and didn't know anything about it. My kids did, but I didn't know a thing about it. So for me, it was just a brand new story, and people were saying, "Oh, yeah, I see you're doing Peace Dragon."
Mickey Rooney, right?
I don't know. It was all fresh to me. It was all brand new. There's no history for me.
What is the message that you would like all these kids to get from this tale?
The value of magic, keeping magic alive. I think it's important.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, when he has his personal moment with his daughter, he refers to the dragon as it was magic. But when he's telling this story of the dragon to the kids, it's like this dragon that tried to kill me.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you take that approach instead of trying to, like, get the kids to believe in magic? That was one question I had.
Well, I think he first wanted to scare them.
Okay.
Wanted to scare them. Because when you tell a story with little kids, that's when it get their attention. You're going to scare them a little bit. So you want to get their attention.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you ever meet a
beach
before you?
What?
What's that?
Well, yeah. I think we have like 1 minute.
Oh.
You get to wrap up now.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Will let me take the picture.
Yes.
I waited so many years.